argument, United States versus Trammell. Mr. Geyer.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, my name is Dave Geyer, and I represent Thomas Trammell in this appeal. The issue before the court is whether or not the district court abuses discretion in the sentence that was handed down. Mr. Trammell entered into a plea agreement with the federal government whereby both parties, in particular the federal government, would recommend to the sentencing judge a concurrent sentence. The sentencing judge at the time of the sentence did not go along with the concurrent sentence. It's our opinion or our belief that the court, in looking at this...
How old was he when he was sentenced?
Mr. Trammell, I believe he's 30, Your Honor. And he had been in jail for a substantial period of time. The PSR sets forth fairly accurately Mr. Trammell's life and what had occurred to him. Again, the court has an immense amount of discretion in determining a sentence in any particular case. However, in this case, there were two statutory sections which the court indicated it did look at in determining its sentence, but then, at least as our position, did not fully expand on as to why it did not go along with a concurrent sentence. 18 U.S.C. 3584B sets forth that the court, in imposing a concurrent or consecutive sentence, should look at the factors of 18 U.S.C. 3553A. The court, again, made reference to those, made cursory passings on those in imposing the sentence. The court also indicated that it had looked at Section 5G13 sub C of the guidelines in making the determination. However, again, the court did not fully expand on...
What is it you want the fully expansion about? I don't...
Well, again, under fully expansion is the court is looking at and concluding as to its why it is coming up with the sentences it does under three...
What is missing? What is it you think you should have said?
Well, again, our position basically is the disparity in a sentence. Again, Mr. Trammell would not provide...
Disparity with what?
With similar sentences, Your Honor, because, again...
Similar people that are being compared.
Well, again, as the documents indicate and the record indicates, Mr. Trammell was not provided with a proffer in the Minnesota case. The crime in Wisconsin occurred first. He was picked up in Minnesota for a second crime. Was not permitted to proffer. If he had been permitted to proffer at that time, the sentence would be running in the same range as what would be the concurrent sentence in this case. He was not permitted or did not have the opportunity to proffer. He was then picked. He was then.
What do you mean he wasn't permitted or didn't have the opportunity?
Well, again, Your Honor, I'm going off of the PSR. I believe it's paragraph 100 or 104 where the pre-sentence investigation writer indicates that had he been provided with the ability to provide a proffer, where he with the pre-sentence
investigation. I don't understand. Who prevented him? Who prevented the what was going on? I have to explain that.
Again, Your Honor, I was not representing him in Minnesota. I don't have an idea what it is. I'm just going off what the PSR writer who did the investigation put in the documents.
Was it they didn't request it or that he wasn't? It's the judge's requirement that he offer it? Or it's that it seems to me if that they may have taken that into consideration. Maybe he didn't want to see. He wasn't charged with this Wisconsin case.
That's correct,
at that
Your Honor.
Time. And so if he went up there in Minnesota and admitted it and confessed to it, in effect, he might have gotten a lot stiffer sentence. Maybe he was just not going to. Maybe he thought he wouldn't get charged in the other one, and he'd only get that sentence and be confined to that case. That would seem to be some logic to that.
Well, there's logic to that, but take the assumption if he had proffered it, then he'd be looking at the max of the 235-month sentence.
Yeah.
So whatever his motivation was, the fact is that when he came back down here, he's basically faced with the same set of circumstances, namely he had committed the crime in Minnesota, he had committed the crime in Wisconsin. And the sentence he would have received had he just it all been taken care of or proffered in Minnesota would have been the 235.
Judge Mannion was suggesting a strategic reason he might have, which you agreed he might well have had for not proffering in Minnesota. Well, it makes a strategic decision. He's taking the risk that if he is prosecuted in Wisconsin, he'll end up worse off than if he'd made the proffer.
Right. I will concede that's always the risk.
So, risk but, materialized. That's what happens to risks occasionally. So.
But again, as you look, though, in fashioning a sentence, and what the court is to look at under 5G1.3, which, again, I know it's not mandatory.
Why is the judge in Wisconsin bound by a proffer which wasn't made in Minnesota? That's your argument.
Well, that's partial of the argument. The argument would be is that
What's
if...
What's the rest of the argument?
The rest of the argument, Your Honor, is, again, that the court did not look at all of the factors. It gave the...
Well, what did it leave out?
Well, it left out, and again, particularly in that one, it would have been sub 6 under 3553.
What's that?
Right there. That's the need to avoid unwarranted sentence disparities. That's the one.
What's the... Then you're back to the proffer again. What else do you have?
The various kinds of sentences available. Now, again, the court did make reference to a concurrent sentence as a possibility, but the court did not then go into why it did not provide
that. Well, he explained he thought this person should receive a much longer sentence because he'd still be a threat after 133 months. What's wrong with that? I mean, we might not agree with it as an original matter, but why is that an unreasonable conclusion for a judge to arrive at?
Well, again, Your Honor, the sentence that would be provided would be much longer than 133 months.
Though. Of course it is. He thought it should be 200 months longer. So that would push him into his 50s, where he'd presumably be less dangerous. Now, why is that unreasonable for a judge to make such a determination?
Standing alone, it would not be unreasonable. But again, right. if the judge had explained that rationale...
He made it clear.
What sentence do you think is proper for a repeated armed robber?
What do I think is proper?
A repeating armed robber.
Standing alone, you've taken all the other factors regarding the armed robber, whether they're mitigating circumstances.
I ask you, what do you think is the proper sentence for a repeating armed robber?
In this case, I believe it would have been the concurrent sentence of 235 months.
What?
I would have believed it would have been the concurrent sentence.
133.
No, 133 is what he received in Minnesota.
Yes. Well, a concurrent would be zero, right?
No, concurrent would have been the 133 months in Minnesota plus then the remaining balance that would have taken him up to 235 months.
200? You mean it? Well, what do you think? The judge should have sentenced him to 200 months but concurrent? Is that what your argument is?
Well, I think the way that the...
So what would the net sentence be?
The net sentence would have been an additional approximately about 130 months.
Well, now I'm lost.
Well, again, as a pre-sentence investigation writer...
He has the 133 in Minnesota. What is it that you think Judge Shabazz should have sentenced him to, a concurrent sentence?
235 months.
Of 235 months.
That's correct. Concurrent with the Minnesota case.
Concurrent.
That's correct.
In other words, 100.
That's no sentence.
Well, it's 100 more.
A concurrent sentence is no sentence. You're serving the same sentence over.
Except in Minnesota, it was 133 months, so this would take you out on an additional well over 100
months. Another 100 months. So that's what you think
Well, again, for the reasons I've already stated as it relates to...
That's just a judgment call, isn't it?
I believe under the factors in this case... I don't think it was a judgment call.
There are no mitigating factors, are there?
There were mitigating factors, and the judge did take into account some of those mitigating factors, such as his drug habit he had had.
Why is that mitigating? Why isn't that aggravating?
Because, again, because in his case, his drug addiction had occurred at such a young age. He wasn't an adult when he became a drug addict, but rather...
What difference does that make?
I believe that statistics will show... That
statistics show that drug addicts are more likely to commit crimes, doesn't it?
That's correct.
Right. And so that makes him more dangerous than if he weren't a drug addict.
Unless, again, he has not received during the course of a youth or childhood the proper treatment and the proper ability.
It's dangerous.
Pardon?
It doesn't make him less dangerous.
No, but it may mean that instead of giving a higher in time, you give more of an extended supervision time. He gets his help in the prison system, which he may not have gotten before, but then he has the opportunity to demonstrate on the street. Obviously, if he doesn't demonstrate on the street, he's back in prison underneath the statute. I see my time, Bill. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gare. Ms. Shibolinsky?
Thank you. May it please the Court. I am Assistant United States Attorney Laura Shevelinsky-Finn, and I was responsible for the prosecution of Mr. Trammell in this case. What this comes down to is whether or not Judge Shabazz abused his discretion or simply used his discretion. And I would say that the latter is absolutely true in this case. As I looked through the sentencing hearing and reminded myself of what the judge said, he didn't just make a cursory review of the 3553A factors. He looked at the victim impact statement. He looked at how Mr. Trammell's crime impacted one of the victim tellers in this case, and he was clearly struck by the trauma that Mr. Trammell caused to that teller. He also, however, looked at the letter written by Mr. Trammell's wife. He mentioned a number of things.
Isn't it odd that he should give a sentence higher than what the Justice Department wanted?
No, it's not. He's the judge. He has that discretion. There are more than one reasonable sentence available, and this is, frankly, as reasonable as what we recommended. And if you break down the numbers here, it does get a little bit confusing. What I think we were looking at is a 235-month sentence to run concurrent.
200 versus 100.
Right. That's right. And he gave his reasons for that. He looked at us and said, and now I'm going to talk about the rest of the story. And what his position was is a guy who has got criminal history category 6, regardless of whether he's a career offender or not, he's got 18 criminal history category points. His crimes got progressively more violent. He traumatized the victim in this case. He did not respond well to incarceration. The judge felt that those things were more important and thought that the sentence within the advisory guideline range, the guideline range, remember, was 188 to 235. This is smack dab in the middle. It's 200 months. He could have given him 235 in addition to the 133. He didn't. What the parties were looking for is 235 in addition to what he had already served. So there's a seven-year, he had 7 years left on his Minnesota bank robbery. If you run the 235 concurrent with that.
There's only 7 years left in Minnesota?
There was only 7 years left, right. He had served a few years, and with the, although I'm not so sure he would have gotten good conduct. As I indicated at the sentencing hearing, I did research what he had left, and on the BOP website it said that his release date looked to be 2015. So what we thought he had left was about 7 years. Judge Shabazz actually split the difference, it seems to me, in giving him the 200-month sentence instead of 235. So really, he got about 4 years more than what the parties were asking for. When all is said and done, that's what it ends up being. And I don't think on this record it can be found to be unreasonable. He painstakingly went through all of the reasons, not just, I looked at 3553, I considered everything, let's call it a day. He really went through each and every factor, his troubled childhood, the alcohol abuse, his wife, his children, his poor adjustment to prison. There was nothing left out in Judge Shabazz's reasonings. So if this kind of sentence is unreasonable, I'm not sure what it is we expect judges to do to meet the requirements under Booker and 3553A. I certainly think that this is a reasonable sentence, and I respectfully request that the judgment and conviction of the district court be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Shabalinsky. Mr. Geyer, you have anything further? Okay, well, thank you very much, and thank you for accepting the appointment.